Welcome to Inside New Mexico. I'm Derek Underhill, and each week at this time, we usually have a conversation with the chairman of the Republican Party and former congressman of the 2nd Congressional District, Steve Pierce. But Steve has been on the radio circuit this week, so we're going to play some interviews he did around the state of New Mexico. I will also have an interview with our state representative from District 39 in New Mexico, Luis Terrazas. He will be talking about parents' rights and how they can find out what is being taught to their children in public schools. First, we'll join Anthony Lucero at KALH Radio in Alamogordo as he and Steve Pierce have a conversation.
There was a letter submitted to the governor yesterday, day before. Over 60 marijuana farmers and retailers are asking the state to stop issuing more licenses. The land of enchantment has a very finite amount of water. It's a desert, and marijuana, as you know, is a very water-hungry crop. It concerns me that these farmers are going to be using up all the water, not to mention the fact that apparently there's an oversaturation in the market. Do you have a comment about any of that before we get onto the maps?
Well, it was poorly thought out from the beginning. People were issued licenses, but they were also put into a tax system, and yet there's no enforcement of laws to keep people from growing it illegally outside the tax system. They can grow it in other states any way they want to, bring it across from Mexico. And so the people who follow the law are going to always be at a 15 to 20% disadvantage. In business, you can't take a 15 or 20% hit on your margin and survive. So I think that the whole business model has been deeply flawed from the beginning.
I would definitely agree with you. And again, my other concern is water because, like I said, the cannabis is very, very water hungry, and there's not a whole lot of that stuff here in New Mexico.
Yeah, that's a great concern, too. Always there's pressure between the urban areas trying to take agriculture water from the farmers, from also the ranchers. And so you're going to have that increased conflict now that the cannabis is going to be taking away from other agriculture crops. I will tell you that food security is one of the biggest problems of freedom that we have. In other words, if we're going to be free and have liberty, that it's important that we have a stable food supply. Not having that creates great problems in people's choices. And so imagine as we transition away from growing the crops, the vegetable crops along the Rio Grande River into growing cannabis, we are giving up the people who want to live stable lives and feed their families for those who want to use cannabis for recreational or other purposes. It's going to be huge problems down the road for the application and the allocation of water.
I would agree 100%. We're visiting with the chair of the New Mexico Republican Party, Steve Pierce. Okay, so let's talk about a little thing that happened Wednesday. The Supreme Court will hear the case with regards to the gerrymandered maps. Congrats on that. I know many people have worked on it, but it was you, Congressman, who was at the forefront, who fought with passion. Before we get too far into this, though, can you explain to our listeners what exactly gerrymandering is, please?
Well, gerrymandering is when you draw lines in order to give favor to one group or another. For instance, the eastern side of the state is very Republican, and so what the gerrymandered maps did was split Chavez County into three pieces, Lee County right down the middle. Eddy County was also divided, as was Lincoln County, so heavy Republican areas, and those votes were then pushed to a line with the far northwest and the far northern part of the state. They basically diminished the ability for conservative, not just conservative Republicans, but conservative Democrats to have a voice in the U.S. Congress. That was their intent, and they succeeded when Yvette Harrell lost the race to the current Democrat representative. And so the Supreme Court basically has said, the U.S. Supreme Court has said gerrymandering is bad. And then the New Mexico Supreme Court has also said any kind of gerrymandering, be it political, racial, or any kind of gerrymandering is bad. So we felt like from the beginning that our argument that this was one of the worst gerrymandered maps in the entire country, which it was, we felt that argument would have fertile ground in the New Mexico Supreme Court, and it did. They agreed with us and said that what was going on in front of the Supreme Court was that the Democrats had filed to have the case thrown out. And their argument was really, really flaky. It basically said just because it's not very democratic and not it's not very good process doesn't mean that it can't stand because the vote of the legislature should be supreme. And that was such a terrible argument for them to make. The Supreme Court didn't even seem to acknowledge it, but that was their argument.
So what needs to be said to the court going forward whenever you make your appearance? What are we going to be saying in order to make some effective change?
Well, what they said was that the case is going to go back to where they assigned it, to the judge, to Judge Van Solen over in Clovis, and that he's supposed to hear the case very quickly. They put that in there, that this has got to be finished by October so that we can be prepared for this coming year, I suspect. But he already, when he issued his initial opinion, that judge had said that the Republican Party made it very strong arguments that the gerrymandering disadvantaged great numbers of people in both parties. And so it's going back to him to hear the case. The Democrats will argue in favor of the maps that they passed. That's what they have to argue because that's the law they passed. We're going to argue that it disadvantages so many people that it should be thrown out. Our recommendation is to go back to the original maps. They stood for the last 30 years, basically since Joe Skeen was in office and then all the time I was in office. Those maps have been pretty well unchanged. And we had always a good conservative voice, even when the Democrats had that seat. Under Mud Runnels, Congressman Harold Runnels from Lee County, he was a conservative Democrat, a conservative voice for the oil and gas region, for the farmers, for the ranchers. But now we're missing that voice. The Democrats intended that, and the court, I think, is going to reverse their maps. What they do in place of that, that's a big question. But the judge will have that opportunity to do that, and he has to do it before October, I think, is the deadline.
Yeah, very, very exciting news here, Congressman. I'm glad to hear that this fight looks like it's going to go the distance, so that's awesome. Do you have any other thoughts about this ongoing battle?
We had a lot of Republicans saying, oh, you're wasting your time, you're wasting your money, and it's been very expensive getting to this point. But I feel like having a voice in Congress is tremendously important. Few people understand it, but when you're there, there is a collegiality in the committees that say that if you're on the committee of jurisdiction and you have an objection to almost any bill, if it is your district, then everybody backs away and lets you by yourself determine that. So many of the things that the extremists were wanting to implement in the oil and gas industry that currently the Biden administration is doing, those things couldn't get through if there was a Republican voice saying, wait, I'm on the committee. The Resources Committee is the basic committee of jurisdiction. I'm on the Resources Committee. This is my district, and I object to what the Democrats are trying to do. And in both parties, for the full 14 years I was in D.C., both parties would honor that if it was your district. And so that's what we're missing right now, is that conservative support for water issues in the West, water issues in New Mexico, for the oil and gas issues, for mining issues. Few people understand that rare earth mining is tremendously important. There used to be 13 of those rare earth mines in the Southern District of New Mexico. Those all got shut down. We were in the process of trying to get them open back up and create jobs. And again, these are the differences in what one voice makes such a big difference there in Washington.
Coming up in our next segment, I'll be talking with our state representative from District 39 in New Mexico, Luis Terrazas. He'll be talking about a new form you can fill out to find out what's happening with your children at public schools on Inside New Mexico.
Attention, New Mexico veterans. If you were honorably discharged from the U.S. Armed Forces, you've earned state and federal benefits, and the New Mexico Department of Veteran Services is standing by to assist you. State benefits include a veteran's property tax exemption, education and training, and transportation services. We can also assist with claims for federal VA benefits. The state of New Mexico and this radio station thank you for your service. More information at nmveterans.org or 1-866-433-8387.
Welcome back to Inside New Mexico. I'm here with our state representative from District 39, Luis Terrazas, and we've made some headway today, I understand, on parents' rights in New Mexico. Welcome to Inside New Mexico.
Thank you. Thank you, Derek. Thanks for having me here today. It's an honor.
Well, thank you, and thank you for what you're doing for the children in our state. Are the children in our state wards of New Mexico, or are the parents responsible for what happens to them?
Well, the short answer is we have a fundamental God-given right to be parents and to take care of our children and be parents to them, not the state. So that's my short answer to that.
So tell us about what happened today and the press release that was sent out.
What we're trying to accomplish today is, as you know, there's a statewide effort, a grassroots effort of parents across the state that are worried about where they sit as parents and their rights of communication with the schools. As you know, some of the legislation that was passed last session challenged that because of it being so ambiguous and not clear. It puts parents maybe in a position where they really don't know what information they're going to get from maybe their school district. And on the other hand, it also can leave this vague situation where we don't know, or the school districts don't know, or the teachers don't know what they can and can't do. And so the purpose of today's press conference was to release a parent consent notification form and release it to the public. And it's just a tool for parents to take this form, download it. They can download it from the main site here, nmhrcc.org, and it'll say Parent Power, or they can download it off the main menu and find it there where it says parental notification form. Anyway, they're able to fill out and pick and choose some of the questions that are on it, and they can express themselves on what they're comfortable with allowing their child to listen to or be a part of, or what they don't want them to be a part of, or what they want and the information that they want to be shared that's important for the parent to learn about that, their student's education and healthcare.
You know, it's interesting. Maybe one of the few good things that came out of COVID is when children were home connected to their classroom on the computer, parents got to see what their kids were being taught. And all of a sudden they're thinking, hey, wait a minute, this isn't what I want.
Well, I have, you know, I don't know that you know this, Derek, but I've got five kids and I can actually see, my wife and I can see the difference of what we dealt with our three older children in comparison to our 13 and 15 year old in school. And so again, I think what's going on is parents just are concerned whether they're hearing the rumblings of other parents that are not content or don't feel satisfied with knowing what's going on in school. And, you know, it just starts spreading to where maybe we just needed to come, actually where we needed to come together and make it clear, clarify all this stuff for parents and schools.
All right. This also has an effect on healthcare decisions. So, for instance, whether our listeners are for it or not, abortion is legal in New Mexico. Mm-hmm. Question is, could your child have an abortion without your consent?
And that is where this legislation that was passed puts everyone on the edge. But that and other healthcare issues, it's not just abortion. It's,
right. I'm just using that as an example.
Yes, sir. Sure. It's an example. And abortion isn't new. Abortion isn't new. And young kids getting pregnant isn't new. And parents are a vital part of their children's struggles and their successes. And they want to be there when their child needs them, maybe in a situation like that, where that question of abortion may come up, or a teen pregnancy or whatever. But a parent should be allowed to have that information so that they can help their child through that and not be left in the dark.
These are decisions in many cases that aren't reversible, whether it's an abortion or a sex change, that children may not have the experience in life to really know whether this is something right for them. And who knows them better than their parents?
Yeah, that's right. Well, I would say that some of these are life-altering, irreversible things.
Mm-hmm.
And whether they're physical, psychological, whatever the impact is on your child, the parent needs to be there with their child, helping them as to the best of their ability. Now, some people would say, well, this is there to protect those from maybe harmful parents and so forth. And I would say to that, that is why the adults in the room, the teachers and the faculty and staff of schools and other public employees and all of us there, our job is to report things like that. So if a teacher or a principal sees that a child is in jeopardy or they feel that he or she is in danger, they need to do the right thing and obviously report that immediately to law enforcement and the proper authorities. But for the state to come out and say, you know, we're going to take the place of parents' decisions when they're struggling with just operating CYFD, and you've seen the struggles that they've had there, for them to try to take the place of parents is a bit far-reaching. So I don't believe that that's a good place for New Mexico to go. And I can assure you, parents, I'm a parent myself. My wife and I love and care about our children very much. And many other parents feel the same way, and they want to be there for their kids. They don't want to be left in the dark,
well,
that's for sure.
It's something so simple, like if your kid is at school and they're playing, let's say they're playing soccer, and the child falls and, say, breaks an arm. Parents would be notified about that.
Derek, parents were notified when they were spraying the weeds around the school using pesticides in the school, and yet this, some of what we're talking about, could lead to a parent being left in the dark. And imagine a child being under some sort of medication that you as a parent aren't aware of, and maybe you, by not knowing what's going on, give something that doesn't work with that medication.
Conflicts, sure.
And what, or conflicts, right? What do we do in the summer? What do we do during the summer? What do we do on long breaks? I mean, parents have to be a part of their upbringing and knowledgeable about their healthcare decisions, period, and from A to Z. I think we tend sometimes for talking points, certain groups and certain people tend to stay in certain little areas. From A to Z, a parent needs to be a part of their child's life to the best of their ability, and it's our job as a state to give them that and work with them and as a community work together, but not to exclude a parent.
That's a nonpartisan right.
Absolutely, 100%. I think kids, we love them, and we want them to be safe, and we want them to be healthy.
We've talked a little bit about the physical part of this. Tell us about the mental health part of this for both kids and parents.
So healthcare is very broad, right? And we have mental health that we have to deal with. And this is where we see that this needs to be clarified and make sure the parents are part of the conversation, as we've talked about before. What you may not know is that I'm a funeral director and have been in the funeral business for over 35 years. And it's one of the saddest things when you have a family in the arrangement office of a parent that lost a child to suicide. Imagine this parent finding out later on that information wasn't shared with that parent. A parent's already suffering and struggling with what should I have, could I have done to help my child through this hard time. And then to find out if the school did not honor that parent's request and directive and something happened to that child, that would be devastating. And I think that's what we have to think about. It's more than just these hot button issues. There's a lot that we've taken in today, and we got to remember that.
I'm talking with our state representative from District 39 down in the southern part of New Mexico around Silver City, Luis Terrazas. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Coming up in our next segment, Steve Pierce will be talking with Frank Neimeyer of Carlsbad Radio about the Supreme Court decisions and more on Inside New Mexico.
National Guard and Reserve members are true leaders, both in the military and in the workplace. They are highly skilled and get the job done every day. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve, ESGR, can help you recruit top-notch service members to your workforce. Hiring Guard and Reserve members is good for your business and good for your community. Visit esgr.mil/employers to learn more.
Thanks for staying with us on Inside New Mexico. As I mentioned earlier, Steve Pierce has been doing a radio tour on stations around New Mexico. Here he is with Frank Neimeyer on Carlsbad Radio.
The Supreme Court has gotten the attention of the president and all of the nation with a series of decisions. Can you kind of reflect on the latest one that has come down and what its impact is going to be on us?
They're all significant. There was a huge decision on religious freedom. The postal worker that had worked for decades, literally, for the post office, they knew that he attended church on Sunday, that it was part of his faith. And when they took the Amazon contract, they suddenly had to start delivering at night and on the weekends, on Sunday and Saturday. And so he was instructed that he had to do that. And he said, no, I can't do it. And so they had some action against him, and he took the case to court. It ended up in the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court says, no, you can't impose your schedules on people's religious beliefs. I think that was a unanimous decision. That was a huge decision. And then we had the one on affirmative action. That was put into place back in the 70s, I think. I was just getting out of college, and maybe there was a reason for it then. There was still heavy discrimination. But since then, minority citizens are saying, wait, we can compete on our own. We don't need somebody to give us a spot. We want to earn our spot. Earned success is one of the most powerful of human emotions, and it was being taken away by because they were just given slots because of their race. And so the Supreme Court said, no, we don't need this anymore. The programs are working well. People are getting similar educations out of high school. A lot of the barriers have been removed, and so So they took down the affirmative action, which guaranteed places to minority candidates over other candidates. And so that was a huge decision. Last week was unprecedented, I think, right, in Supreme Court history.
Surely it was. So this probably irritates the current administration, President Biden particularly, since he seems to be so sold on the idea that everybody should lean on the government. These series of decisions from the Supreme Court seem to say, you know, Americans need to lean on themselves, to be self-motivated, self-determinant. Is that an incorrect reading of that?
I think you're reading exactly right. Conservatives believe that the strength of the country comes from individuals making significant decisions in their individual lives. In other words, those countries that have socialist systems where the government tells you everything you can do, you can't do, how much you're going to make, who you're going to work for, what jobs are going to be allowed, who's going to be allowed to do them. All of those things tend to weaken a society, and eventually it fails, just like the Soviet Union failed. Right. And the power of individual success was envisioned by our founding fathers. They said that we want life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. They defined happiness as economic well-being, and private property rights were the essential element of that well-being. So they wrote that into our Constitution, to where we can work harder and accumulate and have our houses paid for and then pass those houses along to the next generation. That makes for a strong country. And so the Supreme Court, in its conservative tendency now, gave those decisions, and I'm sure that Joe Biden's head is exploding as he reads each one of them.
His comments certainly reflect that. Steve Pierce is on the radio. We're talking about the decisions from the Supreme Court in recent days. I want to talk about the web designer page in just a minute, but let me back up just a little bit to the equal opportunity provisions in the law. There's always been a kind of a stress, pulling in both directions of, you know, making sure that every citizen has an equal opportunity in all aspects of our society, and saying that, and one way of reading this, that one group is so weak, a kind of a racist view, right, that they have to be propped up in order to compete with the rest of us. And that seems to be, if I'm reading some of the argument from the Supreme Court, and that was voluminous, their writing on that particular decision, that they felt like that was part of the reason for not needing that explicit racial determination in college applications.
Yeah, but it's going to extend far beyond the college applications. But your point is correct that the left, the socialists, the progressive Democrats, believe that the government has got to prop everything up, that nobody can stand on their own. Well, that is just completely untrue. If you look at Barack Obama, first black president of the United States, mm-hmm. He can't rise much higher than that. Right now, you have a Republican running for governor in Kentucky that is conservative, and it looks like that he probably will be the next governor of Kentucky. So you have all of these examples of different races that are succeeding in tremendous ways, and the Supreme Court says, wait, individual efforts should be honored and rewarded, not a thumb placed on the scale and giving people undue advantage.
In addition to the potential racial impacts of the decisions of the court, I was intrigued by the decision that seems to turn around a little of the precedent in recent decisions by the Supreme Court on religious freedom. The web designer who said that she was bringing lawsuit because she did not support same-sex marriage and she didn't want to be forced, as a web designer, a creative person, to say things about same-sex marriage that she didn't believe in. How's that going to affect other areas of our society? Was that a correct decision by the Supreme Court to begin with?
Yes, it was a correct decision. Nobody wants the government telling people what to say, what to think, and what to believe.
There it is.
And that was her petition, that what the government is telling me I've got to do, and this was very similar, if you remember the cake decorator in Colorado a few years ago, same sort of a thing. And so the government was basically telling you, you've got to do this no matter what your beliefs are. You can't have individual beliefs. And again, the Supreme Court was pretty soundly behind the idea that wait, the government can't tell you what to think and how to believe, but those are individual decisions. And so again, as we look through the rest of society, we see a lot of pressure on freedom of speech, to see a lot of pressure to get Christians to quit talking publicly and to diminish their beliefs, diminish their efforts. And so that Supreme Court decision, I think, opens the door to people saying, wait, I have religious freedom and I'm going to believe the way I want. To be truthful, this country was founded basically on that idea. People were tired of being told what church to belong to in England or the other European countries. So they came here for religious freedom. They came here for economic freedom, but they were also wanting the religious freedom and the right to express their beliefs and to believe the way they wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a founding principle of the U.S., and I think the Supreme Court correctly decided that the government cannot and should not tell you what to think and believe.
That was the chairman of the Republican Party of New Mexico, Steve Pierce, on with Frank Niemeyer on Carlsbad Radio. And if you've been listening to the program and would like to get more information about the Republican Party of New Mexico, you can do that several ways. First, check out the website at newmexico.gop. The party also has a Facebook page and a Twitter account. The handle is at newmexicogop. If you'd like to speak to someone in person, maybe do some volunteering, you may call party headquarters in Albuquerque at 505-298-3662. That's 505-298-3662. For Steve Pierce, I'm Derek Underhill, and we look forward to meeting with you again at this time next week on Inside New Mexico.